The Rebel Room. I'm Case Kiefer, joined by Ray Brewer and Mike Romala, and you can call off the search. The Rebels have their guy, TJ Otzelberger, hopefully I said his name right, introduced as the new UNLV basketball coach late last week to somewhat surprisingly rousing reception, I thought, at the Thomas and Mack Center. Mike, what'd you make of Coach O, or TJ, as I'm sure Brewer will be calling him for a while, in your first impression?
The first impression of him coming, landing on a helicopter outside the Thomas and Mack Center, which says to me he's not afraid of being the big personality or being the face of the program. You know, when someone says, hey, you're coming from South Dakota State, and the way we want to introduce you at your press conference here is we're going to fly you in a helicopter so that you can wave at people as you land and then walk through the crowd, and that's how you'll get to your press conference. I think Marvin Menzies probably would have said no to that. But Otzelberger seems to be embracing that part of it, so that's the first impression. He seems like he's up for the job. The energy is there. You could see that in the press conference. And he said all the right things. It's easy to say the right things when you're just speaking very broadly at one of those. But I thought he did a good job as far as press conferences go.
Yeah, at this stage of the game, anybody who's a Division I coach is a master in recruiting and selling and winning the press conference. So no surprise there that he did.
I don't know if that's true. I still think there's some guys that are uncomfortable with that. So you're saying they could have hired anyone and he would have done a good job as Otzelberger?
I could have sat up there, Case.
Marvin Menzies' press conference was not as impressive as that. I was at all three of the last ones. And
rank them.
God, TJ and Beard are pretty close to me. I might say Beard just barely because he was a little more succinct. But, I mean, it's revisionist history now. We know what's happened with Chris Beard, and he's turned into one of the best. But I would say, for sure, Otzelberger's was a lot more of a spectacle and got you a little more fired up than Marvin Menzies' did.
I wasn't here for I was actually out of town when the Menzies press conference happened because after the Beard thing, I thought it was safe to take a vacation at my previous job. So I was out of town, and then all that went down, and then Menzies is hired, and he's being introduced, and like, obviously because of the circumstances, there wasn't as much fanfare. People were still broken over, like, losing Chris Beard, and it was sort of, how did we end up here? Whereas I felt there was more, people are already, even though social media wasn't, you know, there were a lot of people who were voicing opinions against Otzelberger when his name first popped up, that he was, you know, the leading candidate. I thought by the time he was introduced, pretty much everyone had come over to his side, and then he... It's pretty easy. You just got to knock down the rest of the pins and win over the people who are on the fence. And I think that's really all you can do at your press conference is, you know, just win over the people that are willing to be won over at that point. And he did that. No one else is, like, unless you bring in Stacey Augmon or some former Rebel or someone who's going to get those people that are just set in their ways against TJ Otzelberger at this point. Like, there's nothing else you get it done. Like, he was okay. And a solid B+, I guess, somewhere in that range.
I agree. I mean,
what's your excitement level? Like, are you excited?
Pretty cynical.
Is this higher? Get you excited?
No. First of all, I wasn't there. You guys were both there at the presser.
It was much bigger. Like, Beard and Menzies were in the Mendenhall Center, and there's maybe, like, you know, 75, maybe 100 people in the bleachers watching. And the TJ Otzelberger press conference was at the Thomas and Mack Center on the Strip View Pavilion, which is their one of their new spaces. And they're, what would you say, Case? Like 300 people, more than that,
yeah,
probably?
I'd probably say 300, 400, somewhere around there.
And all the fanfare, and they get the band playing, and it was a bigger production. It was a much bigger production than either of the last two press conferences. So it was they did make a bigger deal out of it. So
yeah, and I think that was full circle and smart for Desiree Reed Francois. I know a lot of people, I think, took her quote about John Gruden the wrong way and turned that into a whole thing, but I think. And you would know better than this than me, Mike, but it seemed like what she meant is a guy that can command that type of audience, that has that, you know, appeal, that is a guy that people are going to rally around. And I think that you throw TJ Otzelberger into this environment right away, and I think he just succeeded completely. And I don't know. I don't want to say this isn't winning basketball games. I'm not saying this means his whole tenure is going to be a success. But I guess I kind of bristled at Brewer's notion. I really don't think that you throw any college basketball coach into this kind of a wild environment, this kind of spectacle. I don't think everyone's going to be completely comfortable and look like they fit in there. And I thought he did. And I think that shows me something, that this guy, you know, can be the face of the program that the athletic director seeks.
Okay, yeah. Let me. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, go for it.
Let me ask you this, and I hate to go backwards because TJO is the coach, right? CTGO, right? It was CDR, Coach Dave Rice. CMM, Coach Marvin Menzies, and now it's CTGO. It's
all these three
wait,
letters.
Wait, C.
TJO.
Okay, you're saying TG. That's what threw me off.
TJO.
Okay, TJO.
Not TJ like Mexico, okay. TJ like TJO.
I've seen TJO abbreviated enough that I would have picked up on that. TGO threw me off for a second.
Yeah, okay. I'm still learning the alphabet over here. Okay. So, nonetheless, he's the coach, right? If you're a Rebel fan, you're listening to this podcast because you love the Rebel Room. I'm wearing a UNLV jacket right now, my alma mater. He's the guy you got to love. He's the guy you got to hug. No matter who it is, those 6,000 fans that lived through Marvin Menzies are going to be the same 6,000 fans who are already loving TJO, right? Now, let me ask you this, though. You fire Marvin Menzies, whose staff had some people, right?
What do you mean by
that? I'm sorry. You fire Marvin Menzies knowing that you have a chance to lose many players on the roster.
Yes.
And you do that saying you've got a bunch of money to throw around, and you end up with TJO. Are you feeling disappointed that you didn't get Thad Matta or somebody slightly more sexy? Because for me, TJO is a pretty parallel move.
I don't think it's a parallel move. I think he's a different type of coach. I think when Menzies was hired, he was a little older. He had a longer track record. I think the view of Marvin was he was, you know, a mid-major coach who had, you know, reached his ceiling sort of at New Mexico State, and that was the perfect situation for him, the perfect level. He could succeed there. It's callous to say, but he was the fallback option. You know, when their first two options fell through, he was the fallback guy. Otzelberger is in a different part of his career. He's ascending. He's been the coach for three
Another
seasons.
Another reason I like Marvin, he on the way up. Go anywhere.
Well, that's a valid point. That's an interesting thing because there are a lot of you. I saw not a lot, but I've seen some people raise the point that why hire a guy like TJ Otzelberger where if he's got no connection to UNLV, and if he does well here, he's just going to move on to the next school. And to which I say, like, if you're UNLV, you want that. Like, you'd kill for that right now. You want someone who's going to take you to the next three NCAA tournaments, and then have Indiana come and try and steal him away or something like that. Where your program is now, that's sort of what you need. Like, you just need to be good by any means necessary. And then if that happens, then you'll be more attractive to the next coach you want to hire. And if you've made a good hire this time, then you have some confidence that Desiree can make a good hire next time as well if she's still here. So that's a relative point. I have seen people bring that up that, you know, he may be a short timer here, which could be true. He's a young coach. He's probably ambitious. He's probably got a dream job that he wants, you know, down the road. So that is something.
Where would
but
that dream job be? Wisconsin?
I don't know. Just
Iowa State, maybe.
Somewhere, you know, rhetorically. But
you're telling me that Iowa State. If this guy don't.
I just said maybe Wisconsin. Okay. Wisconsin would probably be my first pick. But Iowa State. I mean, he was there 10 years. His wife played there. Met his wife there. He said he learned so much from Fred Hoiberg.
And when he left there to go to Washington for a couple of years, he jumped at the chance to go back to Iowa State because he did two terms as an assistant there.
Mm-hmm.
So he obviously loves it there.
Okay, because to me, UNLV and Iowa State are pretty much on equal ground other than the fact that Iowa State's in a better league.
And money-wise.
I think Iowa State's got way more money.
Money.
Yeah, but UNLV is a bigger city, and if this thing gets humming, that would give him an opportunity to go to Iowa State. You could argue that UNLV could probably pony up something comparable to where he'd have to. I don't know. Just my humble thought.
We had you so down last week. Now you're right back up to UNLV's on par with a pretty successful power conference program.
They haven't won a league since 2000, and they just had their first winning season in the league since, I don't know, 6 years or whatever, and they fired the coach. But I mean, other than that, I mean, all systems are a go.
It's completely hypothetical, but I do agree with Mike. I just think if the guy's going to leave because he's had success, I mean, that's a good problem to have. We talked so much on the last podcast about stabilizing the program. If you get to a point where TJO has been successful enough to take a bigger job, that's going to mean UNLV's in a really good spot, and he's going to have effectively stabilized the program.
To pull a long curve.
And then to your point, Ray, I do believe that there is untapped potential financially for UNLV, where if TJ Otzelberger is the coach that takes them on some rocket ride and they're, you know, Sweet 16 2 years from now, Elite 8 3 years from now, there might just be some like donors who are willing to step up and raise his salary. It's not completely out of the question. I would be skeptical because I don't know if the donors have it in them to be that organized, but it's not out of the question. There is some financial upside here. So maybe he does stick around longer, even if he is successful. So from that instance, if I'm a UNLV fan, I'm not worried about him right now. Like, oh, what if he's too good and gets another job? Like, that's the furthest thing from my mind. I'm not concerned about it at all.
The one thing after watching the NCAA tournament this year, it is impossible to get to a Elite Eight or a Sweet 16. I mean, there's upsets happening left and right. Teams that look unbeatable are going down. The teams that look not unbeatable. I mean, to get through into that one and done scenario of the turn. I mean, look at the Final Four. You got these first timers.
Shouldn't that mean good things for UNLV, though, if what you're saying is true, that there's so much parity and there's all these upsets? I mean, for UNLV to hypothetically get to a Final Four, that's what they're going to have to do. Shouldn't that mean that's a better chance?
I mean, right. I don't disagree with you, Case. That is a very valid point. It's refreshing to see Izzo as the only person in the old guard that's there, and you've got this generation of young and energetic and charismatic coach with UNLV thinks it may have one. It's just tough to win a tournament game. And for UNLV, it's tough to get to the
no matter what the quality of your team is. If we just say broadly, the NCAA tournament is what, the top 75 teams in the country, let's say. I know there are some teams that aren't ranked as automatic qualifiers, but if it's hard to win four straight games against top 75 teams. Like, even if you're Duke or Michigan State or someone like that, it's just hard to beat quality teams four times in a row to get to the Final Four.
Kansas now, they can't even get to the second weekend. They're garbage.
So, and it just speaks to like how far UNLV has to go.
I told you that all year. I think you're trying to needle me, but I told you all year they weren't good. Why don't we poke at Mike's alma mater, Northeastern, while we're at it? They didn't do so good against terrible Kansas.
Yeah, but they made it.
They took us out.
My alma mater is the only one without anybody in the tournament. Yet again.
Do you think, what's the timeline for Otzelberger at UNLV? Like, how fast for you as a fan, you're frustrated like the most of the fan base is. How long are you giving him to make the NCAA tournament?
2 years.
So not the 2020 tournament. You want him in the 2021 tournament.
Yeah. I mean, next year's just, I mean, unrealistic, right? I mean, the guy is rebuilding, and as you know, you've got 3 years to rebuild in Las Vegas. So, if you know, I'd like to see him in the thing by 2021. If it doesn't happen by 2022, we'll do it all over again.
That's the consensus. Like, I posed that on Twitter also, and that was the consensus I got back, was that year one, it's not going to be as bad as Menzies' first year, both because I think the roster will be a little bit better shape, and I think Otzelberger just has a different philosophy, and he'll go for it more in year one. So it won't be that bad. And then year two is the year they've got to make a leap, and most people that responded said, you know, if they don't make it in year two, year three is a hot seat for him, and then that's make or break. And if he doesn't, if they underperform again in year three, like you said, you're doing this again. And at that point, you kind of have to throw your hands up, because I'm not sure if Desiree's even going to be around to do that search, because are you going to let her hire a second coach if this one doesn't work, if she's still here? And even if, you know.
Well, let's start with who's on the roster. I mean, when are they going to make the tournament? Well, who's staying and who's going? A lot of the players you've reported on have said, okay, I'm done. I'm going to go in the transfer portal, that doesn't necessarily mean they're transferred.
It does not mean they're gone 100%. It means that other schools can contact them and pitch them and recruit them. And I think the longer that you're in the portal and you're talking to other schools, obviously the more likely you are to leave, because you just more you've just heard it for longer. You know, if you were to leave these kids without a coach for a month like they did last time, it's hard to come back and commit to staying when you don't know what's going on or who your coach is going to be. This year they wrapped it up not super quickly, but I think it was 10 days or 11 days without a coach. Otzelberger jumped on it right away. He said all the right things. The priority is getting those kids back. They all went to the press conference except for Justin and maybe one other guy. Maybe Chamo Chachwa wasn't there. But they've all been receptive to hearing his pitch and to being re-recruited. So you don't have to keep them all, but if you keep Amori Hardy, Bryce Hamilton, and a couple other players, like, you'll have enough of a roster where he can at least run his offense. Like, you can at least run your system and install it and compete.
Still don't have a point guard.
It's Amori Hardy is your guy. He's your lead guard. I don't know if you would call him a true point guard, but he's a good passer. He's a good passer last year. The offense was best with the ball in his hands. He can be a high-scoring guard under T.J. Otzelberger if he stays. I would expect him to be around 20 points a game next year. Like, he's the key. He's the number one clear guy that they need to bring back in order to be competitive next year. And then if you get a majority of those guys, if you get Tomboy back, who's taking official visits to UConn, he maybe have one foot out the door. But if you can somehow get him back, Hamilton, the
was
big man on the
box at the presser.
No, he was not.
So he's done.
Probably. He's also got the easiest path to transfer because he can play anywhere he wants immediately next year. So it's going to be tough to keep him in town.
I mean, I think that Amori Hardy is just that. That's the big one. Like you said, it looks like Justin is out. I know I've been pretty positive on T.J. Otzelberger. I like the guy. We're setting unfair expectations, so maybe we should just throw this out there. I think it would cut into my excitement level if he's unable to retain Hardy. That just seems like a guy, for everything you just laid out, his offense, how well Hardy would fit, you know, knowing that he has roots here now, it just seems like a guy that would stay. And I think that if Otzelberger can sell him as well as he sold kind of his whole vision at the press conference, I just really think that's a guy you have to keep. And I think that betting-wise, I would have to say he's probably going to be here.
From what I know and from what I've seen from Otzelberger and his system, from watching some of their games and studying the numbers, if you give him Amori Hardy and five or six other guys that can shoot three-pointers on this team and you just rotate them around him and spread the floor, he'll get them playing. He'll get them scoring a lot of points. And they'll be competitive, and they'll be in the top four of the Mountain West. Like, if you give them Amori Hardy, and then a two, a three, and a four that can shoot, and then a five that can clean up the rest of it and play a little bit of a defense, you're in good shape. Like, he can make that work and score 80 points a game. So that's Hardy is the key. Everyone else after that would be nice. Hamilton is a high upside guy. You definitely want him back. Tomboy's high upside, you want him back, but Hardy's the main guy. If he comes back, and he seems very open to it, I haven't spoken to him, but you know, he was at the FaceTime meeting that Otzelberger did right when he was when he got the job. He was at the press conference the following day. He was the one who, when he announced that he was putting his name in the transfer portal, he said he was doing it as Plan B, which means that he's probably open to coming back. So Hardy is the main guy. If they can get him back, you're ready to roll. The season one is going to be very interesting. Yeah. You're still not buying in. You're still not excited.
I mean, right now they've got Trey Woodbury, who's probably not going anywhere.
If any coach could tap into that and play to his strengths, this would be the guy. So that's why if you're a Trey Woodbury fan, or if you want to see him play more, like, this is the coach for him.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, verdict's still out. He didn't get much run in year one, and the curve was, like many freshmen, wasn't great. I just don't know if DeJong fits into a system, if Triple T fits into the system. Dembele, no way. And then he still has to get rid of Coupet, Slovakian. Maybe he could bring some guys in whose last names I could say. Is that possible? Would that be asking too much?
He's already started doing some recruiting. Caleb Grill is was his top recruit that was going to South Dakota State last year. He decommitted from South Dakota State. He wants to come to UNLV. I think that's probably going to happen. That's a three-star guard who can shoot the lights out. One of those just crazy Midwestern kids who will make a bunch of threes. Pretty good athlete. Is that a oversimplification?
The
type. Okay.
No, I like
when I said he's the
as long as he makes a three once a game for the next 4 years.
No,
he's
I just
great.
Like that he's from Wichita. And I was kind of snickering to myself that's just what Brewer wants is another Kansas guy around leading the.
Well, if he keeps the streak alive, he'll be one of those. He'll have the first 3-pointer in many games. I'm sure if he comes to UNLV. So that's one guy. Jonah Antonio is a junior college prospect who would have 2 years of eligibility left. He'd be able to play next year. That's another guy they're after. He shot over 40% from three. Those are the two guys that we know of so far. So he's already doing some recruiting. They're both high-quality shooters. You can tell that's what he wants.
Love that, Kamala. Love that, baby.
Yeah. They're going to shoot a lot of threes. They're going to make a lot of threes. And if you get a guy like Hardy who can, pressure the defense and collapse the defense and kick it out, which is – that's his game. That's his game to a T. That can really work, and that can be something that really cooks, especially in his second year. You get Hardy as a senior. You get the rest of these shooters who have been in the system for a while. Maybe if Hamilton takes a leap, he's got a high upside. I mean, you could really have a good offense, a good team in that second year if these guys come back.
Mind you, however, they couldn't stop a nosebleed last year.
Yeah, and that's not TJ's forte either at South Dakota State. Their defense was not good under him. But
what do you hear about assistants?
Not much so far. Who's the one guy that was rumored? Tim Buckley, who's a assistant with the Minnesota Timberwolves. That was reported, and then someone confirmed that to me that's probably going to happen. And that's about it so far. I'm not sure exactly what he's looking for. You would think that there would be some sort of defensive-minded guy who could help out on that end of the floor and sort of set the defense and be in charge of that, sort of the way Justin Hudson was for San Diego State, bringing that defensive coordinator type. I don't know who that would be, who his connections are, who he's comfortable with, but you would think that's a priority because that's at South Dakota State. It was not the defense. They didn't run any kind of system at all. It was basically just back off, don't get beat off the dribble, and we'll just outscore you at the other end, which I don't think is going to be good enough to win the Mountain West. So he's got to do something to change up his defensive philosophy.
Yeah, and that really concerns me, and not just from South Dakota State. I mean, it's kind of been the case everywhere he's been, even as an assistant. I know he said he modeled a lot of his coaching after Hoiberg and McDermott, who we already mentioned. And their teams are kind of like that, too. They will just shoot you out of the gym but never have been good enough defensively to really take that, Final Four leap. So I think the defensive coordinator thing is like that. If you're a skeptic, I think that's one area you could really point to.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see as the assistants do get announced. If there is someone who's got that defensive background or has a hard and fast philosophy of what kind of defense they want to play, other than just the plain vanilla, don't make any huge mistakes and let's just make a 3-pointer at the other end. So yeah, that'll be a priority to watch. Along with the recruiting, will be the coaching hires that he makes.
Do you think they're going to get anybody who could dunk the ball?
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking about that over the second half of the season as well.
We led the league in the inability to get to the basket
I agree.
Flashy, aggressive plays.
I agree. There were not it was not an athletic team that UNLV had on the floor. There were not if you think back, how many guys can just catch the ball in a half-court situation and dunk it? Probably Jung is the only guy who could do that. Clyburn could dunk if he was on a breakaway, an uncontested breakaway. And there's really not anyone else that could just rise up and dunk off a catch, in the lane or dribble, drive past someone and dunk it. So it does speak to, the level of athleticism that the team did not have last year. So that would be good to see, more athletes, guys on the wing who could, play above the rim a little bit. I agree with you there.
Do you think Nick Blair goes on Scully, or do you think he's going somewhere else, or do you think he comes back as a walk-on?
That's interesting. I don't have any insight into that. And for Nick Blair or his type of thinking, he was willing to come back and sit out a year as a walk-on. So he's already paid his way 2 years at UNLV. I would assume that, you know, if you've got 1 year left as a fifth year like player, if you want to go somewhere else that's offering you a scholarship, personally, like, I would assume you'd prioritize that over being a walk-on. Like, if I can't even think of, like, if New Mexico State calls you up and says, hey, we got a scholarship for you. I mean, why not go there and play for as a scholarship player as opposed to coming back as a walk-on? But I do think he has a skill set that might appeal to TJ Otzelberger because he can step back and shoot the three for a bigger player. So I don't know what's going on there or whether or not he'll take up a scholarship. TJ Otzelberger may not want to use a scholarship on him. Like, that was one of the things that sunk Menzies in the end, was he just had too many scholarships allotted to players who were not going to play. And if Otzelberger probably doesn't want to fall into that same trap, or maybe instead of giving a scholarship to a high school senior who is not worthy, a Slovanchin type, maybe he'd rather give it to Nick Blair for 1 year so that the scholarship's only tied up for 1 year, as opposed to when Menzies gave it to Coupet and Slovanchin, and all of a sudden you've lost those scholarships or they're taken for 4 years, which is something that really hurt him in later classes. So it could go either way. Probably just depends on what Blair wants to do. If he wants to come back as a walk-on, of course they'll take him back.
So. All right. Marvin Coleman will be back, I'm sure.
Coleman will probably have a spot waiting for him. The walk-ons, I think, will have nothing to worry about. If they want to come back and play, I'm sure they'll have opportunities too.
Should be interesting to see how this roster takes shape. I will tell you this. Part of the reason Marvin was termed was there was no excitement for basketball, right? The attendance was down. And I really do feel like there's at least some interest or a buzz, or at least judging from some of the metrics on the stories you've written, there seems to be a little more interest. So if he could go out and get some decent recruits that are semi-attractive, I think this thing could be heading in the right direction.
Yeah, and maybe I'm being a little too positive, though. I did say the negative defense reaction, but I think that even if next year they're kind of what we think, middle of the pack again, Mountain West, and we say that's okay because they need to get to the NCAA tournament, I think there's going to be some excitement with the way they play. I mean, you just look at the guys' metrics and the way his teams have played. Like, they're going to play an exciting style, and I don't hear it as much anymore, but that used to be all you heard from UNLV fans. So we need to get back to the running Rebels. We need to, shoot threes, get out in transition. I just really think that his style seems like it's going to be a fit here.
Totally love that, baby. Running Rebels.
Yeah, it's funny that it's not so much the fast breaks with when he was at South Dakota State. I think they were slightly above average in terms of transition possessions. But when they get into the half court, they're so fast. Like, that's where their pace picks up. Their tempo is really high, even though their fast break opportunities were not that high. It's because when they get into the half court, it's bang, 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 three-pointer. It's like they spread it out. They find that one matchup. They dribble drive, and as soon as that first help defender commits, it's boom, they throw it right out to his man for a three. And it's really fast, and they'll get up a lot of shots and a lot of three-pointers. And if you make a lot of them, you'll score 100 points. You'll have six or seven games where you're above 90 points and flirting with 100. So if people want to see high-scoring games, they can probably do that. Non-conference schedule, it's probably not going to be that exciting. Like, I don't think you can rely on the opponents, like, name value to draw people to the arena next year, because most of that is locked in. I think UNLV has road games at Cincinnati locked in, at BYU locked in. I don't know if they've got a big marquee home game, unless Otzelberger can find something late.
Valpo coming back.
Yeah, it may be one. You may have one more season of that before he can start scheduling for himself, because basketball is sort of set the season before. So I don't know how much wiggle room he has to really build up buzz or excitement that way in terms of the quality of the schedule. But he said he's going to schedule aggressively and play the top teams in the country, which is sort of, that was the same plan that Dave Rice had, and people seem to enjoy that. So
love that plan.
Yeah.
Orleans Arena, bring in Carolina, baby.
I mean, Dave Rice had a great plan. Like, when he looked at his blueprint for building the program, it was really good. And if
Steven Zimmerman got a rebound against Fresno State,
if he'd just gotten better results from the team, if they had just played better, I think it really would have worked. It's just, they just couldn't seem to get over the hump in the Mountain West. But, yeah, T.J. Otzelberger said he's going to have the same sort of thing. They're going to play high-quality teams, ranked teams. He wants to make UNLV the national brand, get them on TV, start recruiting nationally. So that's That's the plan. So maybe they'll next year in terms of the scheduling excitement. But style of play, if people like that, the fast tempo, they'll get into it this year.
Seems you got a little more pep all of a sudden, Brewer. Have the past 30 minutes talking you through this, it made you a little more optimistic for the Otzelberger era? Or
No.
Okay.
Pirates are 6 outs away here from beating the Cards on opening day.
So nothing to do with UNLV.
No, I mean I'm always interested in talking to Oscar Mulla about whatever he's working on.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I'm trying to think of like what's the next big story that could get people really excited about Otzelberger. I guess it would be
Strother commitment
his first
right
big recruit. Yeah, if he can get his first big 4 or 5 star or a local kid. Strother is the one that everyone wants. Like that's the guy that they've been hearing about for years, and you know, a lot of people have already seen him play in high school and things like that. So he would be the big one. You got to jump on him quick though, because it's kind of late in the game. You know, if you're a 5 star recruit, it's like the teams that you're looking at now are the teams that have been recruiting you for 5 years at this point. So I mean, he's got Mark Few, not even on speed. What's the next level after speed dial? That's like they're really tight, so I don't know how you come in here at the last minute and sort of compete with those teams, but come in and see what you can do, see if you can keep them at home, see if you can get some other big name players to come in. I think that would fire people up as well, something that didn't Marvin Menzies was bringing in sort of an underwhelming class in terms of the rankings this year, which people were not that excited about. So that's another.
Yeah, but the one kid decommitted and committed to USC.
He did.
I mean,
Ethan Anderson.
Yeah.
What do you mean by is that?
I mean, that seems like he's a decent player, right?
Oh, he is a decent player. He's a good player.
It was like the LA player of the year, wasn't he?
Yeah, but people were not excited about him because he was ranked, you know, number 279 or something nationally. But if Otzelberger can get a big recruit, or if he hires some, no, I don't think there's an assistant that you could hire that would get people excited. No one's really jacked about the assistant coaches, but
Mike Miller, joking.
Where were you on the Miller train? Were you
I
on
was
board
off,
or off board?
Firmly off.
Okay. Okay.
Sorry, 1 year of coaching doesn't quite do it for me.
Well, T.J. Otzelberger's got the decade as an assistant. He's got 3 as a head coach, 3 good years as a head coach, and he's got a style that you should like offensively. So we'll see what he can do in terms of bringing current Rebels back and stocking the team with players who are immediately eligible this year to round out the roster.
So much to be determined with T.J. Otzelberger, but seems like he got off to a good start. Should be interesting to keep an eye on. Stay tuned at LasVegasSun.com. Mike will have coverage of everything that happens, and we'll be back at some point for another Rebel Room. For Mike and Ray, I'm Case. Thanks for listening.